Hey everyone, welcome to episode 21 of the Historic Performance Podcast, which also happens to be the very first podcast in 2016. Thanks for your support in 2015. You have no clue what it meant to me. Hope everyone had a great holiday period and is enjoying a fantastic start to 2016. I'm your host, James Darley. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, thanks for tuning in. The Historic Performance Podcast is published every Tuesday and Thursday, and notes from today's show and all previous podcast episodes can be found at www.historicperformance.net/podcast. You can connect with me via Twitter at Historic Perform. There I publish all of the latest episodes and give you the opportunity to recommend any future guests to the podcast. In today's episode, I chat with Jason Riley. Jason is the head strength and conditioning coach for the Tampa Bay Rowdies, who play in the North American Soccer League, or NASL, in the United States. In today's episode, Jason discusses his holistic approach to fitness, which not only focuses on short-term performance, but also on the long-term health of athletes. Beyond that, we also discuss nutrition, how he approaches nutrition with soccer players of different backgrounds and different cultures. And finally, Jason talks about how he goes about programming for strength and conditioning for the Tampa Bay Rowdies, both in season and during the preseason. It's a really fascinating episode with tons of great information, and I really hope you enjoy it. Let's get the show started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Historic Performance Podcast. Today, I'm excited to have Jason Riley with me. Jason is the head strength and conditioning coach for the Tampa Bay Rowdies down in Florida. I'm pretty jealous since I'm up here in New York City, and I'm sure it's still fairly warm in Florida. It stays fairly warm down there during the winter. But Jason, how are you?
I'm doing good. We are surviving the heat wave down here for sure.
So, Jason, if we can start off by telling the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you ended up getting the position with the Tampa Bay Rowdies.
Yeah. So, originally from Nebraska and went to the University of Nebraska, went to grad school at University of Nebraska, Omaha, never finished my master's degree. I was 6 credit hours short. So, something that I'm still kind of kicking myself for. But at the end of the day, I was offered a position at that point in time before I finished with IMG Academies down here in Bradenton, Florida. And spent a little over 7 years there working with the youth soccer teams there, the tennis, baseball. And about in 2003, I think it was, I started working with the under-17 U.S. national team as well as the U-20 U.S. national team. Just got to meet, a ton of great coaches from there and traveled with them, did all their programming year round, developing for 2 years at a time. Basically with the U-17 program, we'd have the guys for 2 years and then they would be, with a little bit of turnover, but they'd be turned around and you'd get a whole new group in 2 more years. But from there, I had the opportunity to go to Real Salt Lake and spend a year working with them when John Ellinger was the head coach and, had some amazing athletes there with Eddie Pope and Jason Kreis, who's now coaching, in New York with the MLS team that I was training in, in their last year of playing. And again, a lot of knowledge, there's a big difference even between MLS and going through and, the U-17 program, U-20 programs. It was interesting to kind of watch the whole progression. You deal with youth sports and you deal with the U-17s, U-20s, MLS teams, and just this progression of, how elite these athletes are and just that, the ability for them to really hone in their skills and at every level, it just increases more and more. But, I started there. I spent the next 5 years working in Tampa, started a facility up there and, had the opportunity to work with a bunch of baseball guys, Derek Jeter included, Ryan Howard, and just have been blessed with, the guys that I've worked with and been able to really, see what it takes for the best of the best, to be at that level, from a physical, mental, state, just the way that they approach life in general, has been really interesting. And then, have continued doing that. And, now, you know, when I did that, I started a nutrition program as well, called Elements Nutrition. And, you know, what I was seeing was, you know, this rise of all the performance enhancing drugs that were being presented in Major League Baseball, football, that kind of stuff. And I just was looking at a lot of the supplements out there and I said, you know, there's a better way to do this. So we spent, you know, 2 years basically researching manufacturing companies and everything else and trying to get the best, cleanest quality products out there. And, you know, we've been going strong for about 7 years now with that. And, you know, we're looking at hopefully, come first quarter or second quarter of next year, getting our first line of NSF certified products. So we're excited about that to finally be able to get into the locker rooms of pro sports. We're already in there with individual players, but, you know, to have the teams be able to adapt to it and all that kind of stuff. So it's been a good ride and, have enjoyed the journey and probably learned as much as the athletes have learned from me from, you know, just perspective and outlook on life and what it takes to kind of be the best and, enjoying what I do for sure.
So when you initially started out your career at IMG Academy, was that in an internship capacity?
Yeah. So 99, I was actually, going to grad school. They brought me down in the January timeframe, which for them was their big timeframe with all the NFL combine guys, Major League Baseball guys training there. And, I went there for 6 months, basically came back, decided to go, you know, I went back to grad school for another year and then they hired me on full time in 2000. So went back there full time after that internship as well.
So what sports were you working with at IMG Academy?
Yeah. So I started out, you know, being at the bottom of the barrel, you know, I was working with, a lot of the youth, you know, tennis players and soccer players. Then you would, you know, kind of be a grunt on all the other things, the NFL combine and the baseball stuff. And, you know, I just had a passion for learning and had a passion for, absorbing as much information as I possibly could from all the coaches that I had the opportunity to learn from, you know, Mark Verstegen being one of them, Lauren Seagrave was another one. I worked hand in hand with Pete Bomarito, who's a great mind in the business, you know, Andy Barnett, who's now doing, you know, Australian rules football. So, just kind of blessed to learn from them. And, you know, I quickly kind of ran up through the ranks, in terms of who I got to work with. Yeah, I started going heavily with a lot of the ATP and WTA players, traveled with a couple of them. You know, I was really interesting because I was, one of the coaches that got to work with, you know, a lot of the women on the WTA that have been in the number one spot, numerous times, you know, Maria Sharapova, Yelena Yankovic, Vika Azarenka, like all these girls that, you know, you get an opportunity to work with them when they're really young and try to set patterns in place and all that kind of stuff. So you kind of see the fruits of your labor, you know, 10, 15 years later.
That's absolutely amazing. And I think what's going to make this podcast unique is that most of the other people who I've talked to in the soccer industry have mainly been in soccer for their entire lives and not necessarily trained people in tennis, baseball, American football, and have your background. So just to use that as a starting point, were there any things that you learned from other sports that, you know, had significant carryover when you were working with the youth national team setup and then later on at Real Salt Lake and Tampa Bay Rowdies?
Well, I think the biggest thing that you take from dealing with any sport is that there's a holistic integration. And that holistic integration means that you have to look at all the variables that are going to affect these athletes, from recovery to nutrition to hydration to power output. You know, I call it neuromuscular firing patterns. What's their body telling you from compensation patterns? In each sport, you see different patterns, but, you know, in baseball and tennis, for example, you see a lot of the same things. It's an overhead throwing sport. You know, in American football and soccer, you see a lot of the same things because it's a very quad dominant, glute dominant, you know, sport in terms of the change of direction, the speed and the power output and everything else. So you play off one another, but there are some nuances as well, you know, with each individual sport that you kind of see that make them unique. But, you know, again, I'm a big believer that we look at the whole and then we start to break down that whole into individual pieces. And I believe that that's done for each and every guy. Now, what you're going to see, you know, typically when you go through an evaluation is you see patterns, you know, whether it's, you know, dealing with a soccer team and you see 70, 80% of the guys have these deficiencies, whether it's a strength deficiency, whether it's a firing pattern deficiency, whatever it may be, you're going to see patterns. And so when you start doing a team setting, you can start to plug those type of prehab exercises or soft tissue exercises into the program because they're going to meet the needs of majority of guys. But you do have those outliers that I call them that have to be kind of that unique programming because either their body responds differently than the rest of them. You know, we're all made as this blank canvas. I don't think it's a paint by numbers in any sport that we deal with. You know, we're not trying to fit a person into, you know, a certain realm. We have to make sure that we have all the variables and all the information that we can to make sure that they get a unique program. But I also know in a team setting, that's not always easy to do. So it becomes, you know, very labor intensive at times, especially at the beginning of the year. And you can kind of get into a pattern where it's, you know, a little more manageable because guys will start to understand what you're looking for and how you're doing things. But, yeah, I think overall that's, you know, kind of what I've taken is this holistic approach to training and understanding all the variables.
The next part that I want to cover is mainly your work with the Tampa Bay Rowdies. But yep. Before we get to that point, we have a lot of European listeners and they may know MLS, Major League Soccer, but the Tampa Bay Rowdies are part of a league called NASL.
Correct.
So can you give us a little bit of an overview about that league?
Yeah, so it's composed of 11 teams, North American Soccer League. They have three leagues here in America. You have the MLS, which is kind of the, you know, the one that everyone's aspiring to be in. It's got the most revenue, the most money with it. And then you've got the NASL, which has their individual owners. We have an amazing team, amazing ownership group that has just put a lot of money into facilities as well as the people that are in place there. So I feel blessed to have that opportunity. But yeah, it's just, it's kind of a tier. I don't know if you call it actually a tier below or whatever else, because the USL, which is United Soccer League, and the NASL kind of feed into the MLS. And those are two different kind of competing forces. But yeah, it's a good, you know, it's great soccer. You know, we've got a lot of great players, a lot of South American players, European players that come over here and that are playing for their national teams. And so there's no lack of talent by any means. We have some real talent on these teams, and it's a lot of fun. It reminds me of being in the MLS, really, because our facilities compete just as well as them.
Also, the season is divided a bit differently. I believe you have a spring season and a fall season with individual champion for each one, and then an overall champion at the end.
Correct. Yeah, it's kind of a weird system. You know, I've never seen that, but it's almost like a, you know, you go about 10, 11 weeks and then you get a 3-week break and then you're back at it for 20 some weeks. And, you know, it kind of is it's really refreshing almost to have that 3-week break because there's a lot of time that you can actually reassess, work on, you know, things that you couldn't work on when you're playing a game every week and you're dealing with injuries or whatever it may be, that you have some true training time that you can get under your belt. And so that from that aspect, you know, that being new, it was, again, it's hard to get used to because you get into this game mode. But at the same point in time, you have that 3-week period that you can really kind of regroup and see, you know, where are deficiencies happening across the team? Do we see, you know, increases in injuries in certain areas? You know, what kind of soft tissue injuries have we dealt with? And really address those, and you have some real time to, you know, get those under control as well.
And your season just recently ended, so I think this might be a good time to start just straight from the beginning. Typically, about how long is your off season?
Last year we had a long off season. We started basically the first week of January, and you don't start games until right at the beginning of April. And so we had, you know, it was like 14 weeks, almost that we were in what you consider, well, preseason. And then you have about a month and a half or 6 weeks that is considered off season.
So during those 5 or 6 weeks that you have quote unquote off season, are you sending players individualized programs for them to do on their own, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we actually just met with the team yesterday and kind of went through the whole process. And so we give them final evals, so we know what we, you know, how they lasted throughout the season, including body comp and weight, and you know, looking at all the joint specific tests and all that kind of stuff. And so then we have certain things, certain markers that they have to maintain throughout the off season. But the program is very basic. It really looks at a lot of aerobic capacity, aerobic power training programs. So it's real light. We try to get them doing as many things, you know, off their legs as possible, whether it's getting in the pool and doing interval runs, you know, bikes, ellipticals, doing some just different stuff, because it is literally from the time you're doing preseason until the time that you finish the season, it's 10 and a half months. So I'm a big believer that mentally and physically that 6 weeks needs to be where we're doing 2 or 3 days a week in the off season to just kind of hold on to certain things. And I believe the conditioning is one of those things that we really need to be a part of. And then I do a lot of core and prehab exercises. So giving each guy, you know, here's what we battled throughout the year, you know, tight hip flexors, tight IT band, tight quads. So we're going to spend a little more time on myofascial stuff there, stretching stuff, you know, here and there. And then we're going to work on glute medius activity in terms of your prehab exercises. And it's just a very basic program because we don't know, you know, going back home, we don't know if these guys are going to have what facilities they're going to have. It's all going to have to be body weight stuff. If they're going to have great gyms, you know, pretty much everyone has access to most stuff now. But you know, we don't want them getting into this mode of train, because we have a 3 month preseason that kind of builds into the regular season.
So could you give us an overview of how the preseason looks like, since you have 14 weeks, which is a very long preseason compared to especially what you have in college, which is 2 weeks, and even with most of the European teams, which is 7-8 weeks usually.
Absolutely. So, you know, we typically take the first 4 weeks and we basically are in integration. So integration means that we do all the evals, all the testing. If we want to get into the specifics on what we do a VO2 max test. Last year, all we did was the intermittent beep test. And this year we're trying to do actually a metabolic cart along with the beep test. I know when I was the U17s and the U20s, we did both just so we could do a comparative analysis to see what information we were getting and if there was a good, basically if they were telling us the same thing, and we found out that they were extremely close. So, you know, for the teams that don't have the ability to do a metabolic cart, I'm a big believer the yo-yo test, the intermittent beep test, is a great tool to use, especially when you're dealing with large groups. We do a biomechanical evaluation, looking at deep squat, looking at leg length discrepancies, Thomas test, single leg balance deficiencies, you know, just a lot of different things between myself, the medical team, as well as the athletic trainers. And so there's about 5 different battery of tests that we do there. And, you know, that way we have the whole information. But yeah, the first month going back into that, we literally look at that reintegration. So it's heavy on core, it's heavy on prehabilitation. And then we start the foundation of building a good strength base. You know, we usually go 2 to 3 weeks of an acclimation period, and then we'll start getting in right into strength stuff. The next 2 months, which is February and March, February, we start adding in a lot more of the conditioning program, so your energy systems development. And there's a little bit of scattered gameplay in there, so not very often, but we are doing some game activity in there. And then March is, you know, we get into a little less weight room activity, a lot more on the field speed and agility stuff. We do a lot more games, you know, and we're still continuing, you know, core and prehab is our big thing that we do throughout the entire year, whether that's off season, preseason, or in season. We're doing all that stuff all the time, just because, you know, I look at soccer as it's an overuse sport. How many kicks do you take in a game, in a practice session, all that kind of stuff? And so you're constantly battling tight hip flexors, tight quads, which is going to, you know, change your pelvis, which can, you know, make your hamstrings more susceptible to injury. So we do a lot of hamstring activation exercises and hamstring strength stuff even throughout the season. But that's kind of my big goal, because we do have that 14-week period, is we do a lot of posterior chain, a lot of hamstring strength, a lot of back strength, to work on posture so that we get better firing patterns overall.
And I think that makes perfect sense, especially when you're talking about how quad dominant soccer is, that you want to make sure that they have very strong posterior chain in order to prevent hamstring strains and any of those other issues that come with those imbalances.
Absolutely.
After you've finished with the preseason, now you're transitioning into that first spring season block. How do things change in terms of what specific energy systems are you trying to target during in season? And also, how does your gym-based SNC work change?
Yeah, so, from the gym standpoint, we go into what I call just maintenance mode. Let's not lose strength. If we have, any time that we can try to gain it, we will, but we're just trying not to lose strength. And it becomes very heavy still on posterior chain. We'll typically come in, one of the first activities that we do when we start the in-season stuff is we'll do some type of explosive work. We keep the volume very low, just because we want to have some neural system activation before we start the exercise. So whether that's clean pulls, whether that's box jumps, you name it, we're trying to do, something in there that's going to get them their nervous system ready and activated for that. We always do some type of posterior chain. On our we do two lift days. So the guys that are coming in season that are playing, we just had a game on Saturday night. We usually give them Sunday off. And then on Monday, those guys are coming in and doing some type of recovery run, stretch, all that kind of stuff. And they're coming in and doing a lot of mobility work with me, a lot of prehab work, core work. And then they lift heavy on Tuesday. So that's their heavy lower body lift day, would be a Tuesday. And they usually get Wednesday off. On Thursday, we're doing some type of lift again. It's mostly upper body, prehab, and core, but we will include some type of power movement in there as well, whether that's med ball tosses, something for activation. And then Friday is a real light kind of walkthrough day. With my realm, it's more warm up, agility stuff, keeping it real short and sweet, and a lot of soft tissue work and stretching after practice.
Now, when it comes to conditioning, are you doing any off the ball conditioning during in season, or is it mainly, are you trying to work on conditioning with the ball specifically during your training session?
We do both. So Tuesdays are usually the days that are heavier days for that as well. So we do, I work with Eric Arbazau, who's one of the coaches. He does a lot of the ball work conditioning, and then he'll do that in the beginning, but we usually finish every Tuesday with some type of conditioning program, whether we're looking at anaerobic alactate capacity and it's short and sweet, the bouts are under 10 seconds. They get a little longer recovery. Those are the things that, anaerobic lactic power is another one that we're looking at. So we kind of keep within, two or three of the different six energy systems that we're really trying to hit that are short and sweet. They're fast, they're intense, but, and we're keeping the reps between 6 and 10. We don't do a lot, because I believe that you are getting a lot of conditioning in the practices if they're done right. And, we are a team that is extremely strict on time. And so if you get 15 minutes for a warm up, you're getting 15 minutes for your warm up. And same thing with the skill coaches and everything else. Like, we keep it to a T. And so, we try to get as much done and make the most value out of those workouts that we possibly can when the guys come in.
When it comes to monitoring the players in season, do you have any specific equipment that they use? Do you have heart rate monitors? Do you have GPS? Do you use wellness questionnaires?
We do a hydration status every day, so pre and post hydration status, a eval basically at the very beginning, just understanding, what is their daily thought processes. So, how did they sleep, all that kind of stuff, number of hours that they slept. Our guys down. We've been looking at some different systems to incorporate actually, because we feel like that's one area that we can improve upon. But as you start to get into systems like that that are less arbitrary or, less kind of a feeling or a, what I call RPE almost, it becomes very cost prohibitive in some essences, and you have to kind of sell coaches or ownership groups on why that information will be valid. And so we've been looking at a couple different ones that we would like to purchase this off season to be able to incorporate into next year.
But in terms of we're talking about heart rate monitors or GPS, that's something that isn't used at the Tampa Bay Rowdies currently.
Currently, no. No, we used it with the U-17s, the U-20s, Real Salt Lake, but we haven't used it currently.
So when you're getting an idea of the actual training load, you're doing it basically off an RPE system?
Pretty much, yeah. A 5-questionnaire that, you know, it says, you know, how do you feel? What was your rate of perceived exertion, sleep patterns? You know, it's 5 questions that they have to rate on a scale of 1 to 5. And that just kind of gives us a, you know, like I said, it's archaic, you know, in terms of what we're trying to do. But, you know, I think that to me, it just goes to show that there's no perfect system and you have to be creative with the way that you do things because you want feedback from your players. You need to know how they're feeling. You need to understand what their bodies are going through on a day-to-day basis. But I also believe that, you know, we have a extremely close staff and we have a great relationship with our players. And so it's asking the right questions to be able to pull the information out from the players. And, you know, if you go to your 5 or 6 guys that you know that you can really trust that the information they're going to give you is, you know, 100% accurate, you can make some educated decisions on what the training, you know, for that day should be. You know, do we really need to go into a lighter mode, or can we push these guys through today because they're all feeling really good? You know, would I like to have those monitored? Absolutely. I would love to have, you know, a catapult system or, you know, whatever it may be that will give you some true data on what these guys are going through from a, you know, physiological standpoint. But again, most coaches aren't going to have the ability to have that. And then it becomes this whole thing with how much time are you trying to utilize reading that information, which sometimes in itself is a whole nother job, having gone through that. So, you know, I think that you have to ask the right questions. You have to be very cognizant of the players and you have to know who to ask the questions to. You're asking everybody, but you have to understand, you know, who are the important people that really are in tune with their body. Some of the veterans, but you also need some information from the young guys that, you know, are really in tune with their bodies. So you can get the best information to make the, you know, you always have a training plan, but training plans are made so that you don't fail, but they're also made to change. So, you know, we're very in tune with that, I think, as an organization.
Yeah, I think that's one of the greatest issues I typically see from, especially from younger strength coaches, is that coming out of university, you have this grand idea of, you know, this is going to be the perfect program, but you have to realize that A, you have to be flexible. B, you're not always going to be able to implement what you want to implement. A lot of it has to do with the technical staff.
Yep.
You have to have a good relationship with them. And I think that based on our conversation so far, it seems that's the case. You have a close-knit community at the Tampa Bay Rowdies and you're able to make the best of the situation and provide your players with the best possible training given the circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm, you know, we have a staff meeting every morning and we all have to report to it. And, you know, you kind of get an understanding of where everyone's head's at, what, you know, if there's going to be any changes to the training program for the day, you know, they'll ask me, hey, Jay, yesterday in training, we saw, you know, energy levels really down. Can we do something different with the weight room? Of course, you know, like what I have to, I've learned a lot being in this industry, you know, about 18 years now, is that if you're not a team player, you're not going to have a job for a long time. And I think that doesn't mean that you don't stand up for what you believe in and you don't stand up for what you think is in the best interest of the players. But the coaches are also there because they've been through it and they've experienced it and they have some insight that we may not have. And you have to process all that information on a day-to-day basis and make the best call and know that, you know, some days you're going to win, some days you're going to lose, you know, based off of your recommendations or the coach's recommendations. You know what, I should have stood up for the guys and done this, or yeah, that was the right call. We made a good decision here and there. But you know, I love that team atmosphere because, you know, when you do have those daily discussions, you start understanding the thought processes of everybody's mind that is making decisions for the team. And it gives you just a good understanding of why things are happening the way that they're happening, or, you know, where we can change, because you have a lot of information to process on a day-to-day basis.
when we're talking about gym-based SNC, do you typically have one program for the entire team? Or, for example, I know you said that you have maybe a lot of South American players and younger players that may not necessarily have an extensive training age, and at the same time, you have veterans who have probably put in significantly more hours playing football and maybe a little bit more beaten up. So do you individualize the programs, or is it basically, you know, here's the program and this is the program for everyone?
Yeah, we do a program for the keepers and a program for the field players. In terms of where the variability comes in the prehab exercises. So looking at specific deficiencies that each guy needs to really address. So that's the individualization. And then in terms of the veterans and the, you know, the younger players, what I've done since the beginning of this year is I've always done an optional set. So, you know, in season, we might only be doing two sets of five, but there's an optional third set of five that, you know, sometimes I'll make the younger players do or give everyone an option. And then, you know, what I, again, it comes back to this industry is big off of relationships. I think that's everything in this business. And it's understanding the players. And, you know, you get injury cases. You know, this year we had, I think it was three shoulder injuries, actually. And so what's written up on the board is not going to be a best fit, you know, for everybody. And so it'll be, you know, guys coming in, hey, Marcelo, I want you to make sure that you're doing, you know, a pull rather than, you know, a dumbbell bench press. You know, and so you make those on the fly decisions as well. To make sure that you're not putting, you know, an injury at more harm, basically coming through there.
What do you do if you get a player that maybe has a training age of zero? They don't really know how to even do basic movements. Like their squatting pattern is off, their hip hinging pattern is off.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that, again, we have this overall program that we want to accomplish. But if you have a, you know, this training age of even one or two, sometimes. You know, we're getting Honduran people that, you know, from national team that have no training experience outside of just playing soccer. Great footballers, but, you know, at the end of the day have very little education or, you know, thought process into what goes on into all the ancillary things that make them a professional. And, you know, I use dowel rods, I'll use body weight, I use dumbbells, anything to create patterns. And again, you know, I think that you can look at a squat and say, yeah, back squat's my goal. Well, how do I get there? Well, can they do a body weight squat or a counterbalance squat effectively? Can they do a dumbbell front squat effectively? Can they do a front squat effectively? And that's kind of my progression is, you know, looking at things. And then if, you know, if guys have trouble getting depth, because, you know, a lot of soccer players, mobility in their ankles is really restricted. So if I put them into a 90 degree or lower squat, you know, what is that going to do to their back? Is that going to, you know, blow their back out? They're going to have some disc injuries. And then that's, you know, me on the line. We do a lot of box squats as well, just as a teaching tool for sitting back, but also to limit range of motion sometimes when, you know, especially in season, you know, off season, we're trying to do different things to create range of motion in the hips and the ankles. But in season, we're trying to still, you know, maximize our performance, but decrease any injury potential that, you know, especially in the weight room, you know, you start injuring players in the weight room and, you know, you lose your job security. And I'm not a big believer that you do things because of job security. You do things because you have a philosophy and you're going to stick to that philosophy, but you're also going to learn on a day-to-day basis on what works and what doesn't work. And you're going to learn it with different populations of players as well, you know, from the vets to the younger guys, you know, to the keepers, to the position players, you know, there's a lot of things to kind of take in on a day-to-day basis.
Another aspect that I think sometimes is missed is nutrition. And especially since you own a nutrition company, I'm sure this is something that you emphasize with your players, especially like you mentioned, you getting people from Honduras and South America, where maybe those aspects haven't really been brought to bear on them, or they may not necessarily be as educated. So how do you go about educating players in terms of making good nutritional decisions?
Yeah, so a couple different ways. We actually do an informal team session, and that's more of just a Q&A. What are guys looking for in terms of answers? Where do they feel like questions? What kind of questions do they have? And a lot of that will, you know, from information that we get, is going to be around what do I eat before games, what do I eat after games, all that kind of stuff. And so it's really informal. We just try to give them a wealth of knowledge at the very beginning of the season. As soon as final rosters are pretty much done, we go into a formal presentation. Here's what we're looking at. Here's things that we're trying to eliminate. Here's things that we're trying to put into the program. You know, you're dealing with cultural differences in terms of foods that people like, foods that people eat on a day-to-day basis. So it has to, again, with these, it becomes this holistic solution, but you're not trying to necessarily make individual changes right there in this team setting or group setting. What we're trying to do is give them the foundation of nutrition. What do we need to look at? What's your water intake on a day-to-day basis? What kind of carbohydrates are you taking in, you know, during the game, post-game, pre-game nutrition? What type of proteins, what types of fats are we taking in? How do these all affect the body on a day-to-day basis? How does it improve performance? And, you know, where I think a lot of us may miss out is this whole concept of quality of life. You know, I've been in it long enough that I've seen when guys are done playing, what is their quality of life? And so there's a lot of things that I put into these nutrition programs that are quality of life measures, but they're also performance measures. Let's, you know, reduce intake of sugars as much as we possibly can, because they know in excess they can be disease promoting. And then we get into, you know, throughout the season, we're doing individual consultations, actually giving out meal plans. What do you need to have day-to-day basis? What does the carb intake look like? What does the protein intake in terms of ounces of protein look like? What's your fat intake? What's the overall carb protein fat ratios? So, you know, it becomes a lot more individualized at that bay. But again, it's, you're trying to just kind of build them up throughout the year, and then give them little things that they can kind of hold on to, because, you know, some of these guys are 20, 21 years old, and you can talk over their head in an instant where they take nothing in. So if you can start to give them true, real information, you know, you can really start to impact their life and definitely their careers.
No, definitely. And I'm really glad that you mentioned quality of life, because as you mentioned, I do think that's something that's overlooked. And I also think it's fairly overlooked at the college level. I recently read an article where I was talking about depression from college athletes who have been athletes their entire life. And, you know, they've been reared a certain way. And then all of a sudden, all of that organization is taken away from them because they didn't become professional athletes. And I think sometimes we overlook both of physically, you know, what physical shape are they going to be in when they have families as they get older. And also, if we're not helping them in terms of nutrition now, you know, once they're not playing professionally anymore, what is their nutrition going to be like?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when you look at performance and you look at kind of disease states, the one thing that, you know, continues to overlap is inflammatory responses. So if we can control inflammatory responses throughout the season and doing that the proper way, you know, you can always reduce inflammation or mask inflammation by taking NSAIDs or whatever it may be. But how do we truly affect them on a day-to-day basis through the food that they intake? And so for me, you know, a lot of things that we're looking at, if a guy is getting non-contact injuries and it may not be, you know, has some good firing patterns, we're going to look at inflammatory responses. So, you know, what are things that we can cut out of the diet that may cause inflammation, whether that's sugar, whether that's dairy, whether that's wheat, and look at a lot of those processes, because again, it comes down to, we want performance on a day-to-day basis now, but if we also control inflammatory responses, we're controlling a lot of the diseases that, you know, are killing, you know, Americans and people across the world, you know, at 50, 60 years old. I mean, this is the first generation that, you know, where the youth are not going to live as long as their parents. And so, you know, I think that there's a true crying out for nutrition advice and sound nutrition advice when it comes to helping people out. And whether that's athletes or just, you know, layman's people, I think it's really important to kind of hit some broad things, but also really dive in and see how you can help people and affect them, because, you know, you want them to be happy throughout an entire lifetime, not just a career.
Yeah, I think that's really refreshing to hear, especially from someone who's working with professional athletes. Normally when, and it's a good thing to mention on this podcast, because normally when we're talking about fitness coaches and strength conditioning coaches or sports scientists at this level, we're really focusing on performance and, you know, how can we optimize the player's performance on the field to hopefully help the team win. And obviously that's important from job security aspect, but it's refreshing to hear the holistic view that you're taking.
Yeah, you know, it's I just saw it at an early age. You know, I'll tell you a little story, but my dad was, I was in ninth grade, and I remember my dad's first heart attack. And, you know, it was at that point in time that nutrition kind of became this integral part of my life. And, you know, I cut out donuts and soda were the first two things that I cut out from my diet, you know, in the ninth grade. And so, you know, every year you just kind of get more and more strict on yourself, because you just, you know, my dad has gone through 6 heart attacks, and he's survived all of them. Not saying that that was a quality of life, but I looked at kind of what it did to our family and the struggles that I have of why won't you make these changes? You know, your family loves you and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, being in the profession that I am, I get to work with amazing athletes, and I get to work with, you know, people that are at the top of their game. But it really comes down to education. And I think that's strength and conditioning. And I think it's nutrition. I think it's recovery. If guys are not educated correctly on how they can improve performance and how they can improve their quality of life, it's not going to be a lifestyle that they're going to embrace. And so, you know, I think it's our job as professionals to make sure that we're educating and we're trying to reach these, you know, players and these athletes as much as we possibly can. You're literally, you know, trying to breathe life into them so that they can, you know, have this structure and they can have this quality that they're, you know, going to be happy about when they, you know, throughout their playing career as well as post-playing career.
This is a great transition into part of the reason that I created this podcast was to give advice and expertise from people like you who work with professional athletes to younger strength and conditioning coaches that may just be coming out of university, are interested in working with athletes or even with general population. So what recommendations would you have for those types of people that were especially beneficial for your career?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the greatest things that you can do is continue to learn. You know, I think in this business, if we stop learning, we're out of the business. There is always something new, always something, you know, fresh coming out that even if you don't embrace the philosophy or the, you know, of that training mechanism or device or structure or whatever it may be, at least you're going to be knowledgeable of it and be able to either talk people into it or talk people out of it. Based off of whether that's research or your understanding of what it may be. So continued learning and continuing education is critical, I think, in this industry, because it is changing so fast with technology and everything else that's coming up. But I also think that there, you know, for me, the single most important thing that I have, I think that I can take pride in this profession is the fact of what I talked about before, and it was the ability to educate and to build relationships. And I, if there was anyone coming into this industry, I would say be persistent in educating as many people as you can and try to build as many lifetime or long-lasting relationships as you can. I mean, some of these guys that are now retired are some of my best friends. You know, I can call them on the phone. I can talk to them at any point in time, you know, and I think that's because there's a respect there of what I helped them do throughout their career. You know, I didn't make them who they are, but I could have, you know, helped them along the way. You know, everyone's kind of born or blessed with some genetic predisposition, but, you know, it's our job as strength and conditioning professionals to allow for them to reach that genetic potential. So, you know, that's kind of my advice to people coming into this field, you know, learn, educate, and build relationships, and you're going to be extremely successful.
You mentioned continuing education, and is there any particular resources, whether it be websites, books, other professionals that you follow that you could recommend to those individuals?
You know, I read a boatload of books. I am kind of a research junkie. That's my wife's biggest beef with me. I read everything from West Side Barbell to Mark Verstegen to Mike Boyle. I try to gather as much information as I possibly can from professionals that have done really well in this industry. And, you know, I think what you have to do is you have to filter through all of that you're reading, and you have to form your own thought processes and your own patterns. Because if you start to copy and paste, you know, I think that's a recipe for disaster. You have to understand why you're doing something and why you believe in something in order to develop that into a process that you're going to put into practice. You know, I think there's some great resources out there. You know, those three that I just named, I think, you know, very different, but at the same point in time, you know, there's lots of things that I like about, you know, each one of them. Read a lot on nutrition from, you know, Udo Erasmus, which is, you know, a fats and oils guy, to you name it. Like I probably have more nutrition books than I have strength and conditioning books, which is sad to say, but I'm constantly reading as much as I possibly can and trying to stay up with the research. And, you know, it's hard. You're never going to stay up with anything because there's just so much that's coming out, and the accessibility of technology and the internet makes, you know, almost information overload. But, you know, I guess that's my advice.
No, definitely. And there is definitely, I would say, some information overload at times. It can be a bit overwhelming. But if anyone has any questions or comments regarding the podcast and any of the topics that we covered, what's the best way of contacting you?
Yeah, they can email me, and it's just J Riley, and it's R-I-L-E-Y. And then I'll give my nutrition one. It's Elements Nutrition, and it's Elements with a Z, nutrition.com. And they can just email me anything, and you know, I'll get back to them, and love to discuss, you know, any topic.
No, definitely. And when I publish the podcast, I'll make sure to link your email there. That way they can easily reach out to you.
Okay.
So Jason, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. You know, I greatly appreciate it. I love to learn the fact that, you know, you're taking this holistic approach with your professional athletes. I think it was a bit refreshing to hear that. And also, I think that's what's going to make this podcast unique.
No, I appreciate it, James. I appreciate reaching out to me. And, you know, if there's anything I can, you know, do in the future, love to come back on at any point in time. And hope your listeners enjoy it for sure.
As always, thanks for tuning in to the Historic Performance Podcast today. If you enjoyed the podcast, make sure to leave a review and rating on iTunes. It really helps others discover the show. If you have any questions or comments for Jason Riley, please feel free to send him an email, or if not, a Twitter message. He's more than happy to respond to you. Also, if you have any feedback regarding sound quality or have any recommendations in terms of future guests, please make sure to reach out to me via Twitter at @historicperform. Or you can also email me at historicperformance@gmail.com. Thanks a lot. See you next time.